You can look at these numbers and see we created 15 to 25,000 jobs per year, every year.
A look at how a lean capital budget could affect employment in the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a resolution in the Anchorage Assembly's epic tennis court saga.
The Tennis Association is disappointed, but also relieved that it's over.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
A Coast Guard petty officer has died after being injured during a rescue in the Eastern Aleutians in November. The Coast Guard isn't releasing the officer's name at this time. Allison Conroy, the chief warrant officer for the Pacific area, says the officer was a crew member aboard the Coast Guard cutter Waish. The Waish sent its small boat to rescue the crew of a stranded fishing vessel, the Alaska Mist, on November 14th. The Mist lost power and was adrift off Amak Island, which is north of Cold Bay. Conroy says the Waish crew member was aboard the cutter's small boat. He suffered head trauma during the course of the rescue. He was later flown to Seattle for medical treatment. During the recession, Alaska lawmakers spent record amounts on infrastructure as a way of putting people to work. They even went as far as calling their capital bill budgets job bills. But with less tax revenue coming in, the days of fat capital budgets are coming to an end. Should Alaskans be worried about what that means for the state unemployment rate? APRN's Alexander Gutierrez has the story.
Just last year, the state spent $2 billion on capital projects. There was money for ski clubs, shooting ranges, climbing walls, and theaters, on top of all of the bread and butter stuff, like bridges and harbors. The capital budget that Governor Sean Parnell proposed last week is not quite so ample. It would bring state spending down to about $500 million. With the state expecting a big drop in revenue, there's simply less money to go around. Even Parnell's critics, like Senator Bill Willikowski, understand where the governor was coming from on this.
You have a deficit of billions of dollars, and so where are you going to cut? And that's probably the easiest place to start cutting.
Just because Willikowski gets the reason for the cut doesn't mean he's comfortable with its potential impact. Earlier this year, he asked the legislature's research department to figure out what effect capital spending has on Alaska's economy. As an Anchorage Democrat, Willikowski has been supportive of higher taxes on oil, and he wanted to find out just how many jobs were created by capital spending under the previous revenue system. The report's conclusion?
You can look at these numbers and see we created 15 to 25,000 jobs per year, every year.
Using numbers from the state's Institute of Social and Economic Research, every $1 million spent on infrastructure supports 8 to 12 jobs. That counts people who are directly employed by the project, and it counts people who are simply benefiting from the extra money circulating in the economy. Retailers, restaurant workers, really anyone who sells goods or services to the construction crew. Based on ICER's multiplier, next year's capital budget would support between 5,000 and 7,000 jobs if the state ends up spending the amount proposed by Parnell. Even if legislators appropriate additional money for their own projects like they're expected to, the employment impact will still be low compared to recent years. Willikowski says that finding work could be harder for all those extra people who benefited from bigger capital budgets in the past.
The job that you don't create is one that's harder to quantify. It's, you know, you don't have someone out there whose job you're cutting.
And here's where things get a little more complicated. You can say capital spending creates jobs, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee unemployment will go up just because the state's spending less on infrastructure projects. Neil Freed tracks employment trends for the Department of Labor. He says Alaska's job market has been steady for a while, and the construction industry has been fairly stable.
Employment has not fluctuated very much year to year for at least 4 or 5 years.
What changes is who pays for it.
Some years it's very little private, but a lot more federal. And some years there's a lot more oil-related construction. So it does change constantly.
Already, the state is expecting the federal government to pick up some of the slack on infrastructure projects. Parnell's proposed budget authorizes more than $1 billion in federal spending, which is an increase over last year. The governor also expects development on the North Slope to buoy the employment rate. Regardless of whether it's because of the new oil tax regime or it's because they're finally making good on projects that have long been in the works, companies like BP and ConocoPhillips are ramping up their spending. Freed says we're also seeing more activity in the retail sector, with stores like REI coming to Fairbanks and a certain donut shop opening in Anchorage.
Krispy Kreme certainly wouldn't have made, you know, that decision in 2008 or 9. A lot of these places would not have ever thought about opening up new stores or restaurants or, you know, other kinds of operations during the middle of the recession.
There's one more big source of money that could keep employment up. Freed says the capital budgets of past years could actually end up offsetting smaller capital budgets in the future.
These dollars, especially the public dollars, whether they're federal or state-related public dollars, they take a long time very often to be spent. So there's a lot of money that was allocated in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago that will just start getting spent or will start being turned into brick and mortar now.
Even if this year's budget is a little lean, there's still lots of capital money left from previous budgets available for construction. During his budget rollout, Parnell said there was still $5 billion in old capital appropriations that hadn't hit the streets. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Federal court rulings supporting the National Park Service regulation of state-owned waters in parks are being appealed. A recent ruling turned down Anchorage moose hunter John Sturgeon's challenge of a Park Service ban on hovercraft on the Nation River inside Yukon Charley National Preserve. Sturgeon's attorney, Matt Findley, says a second appeal filed Friday contends last month's decision misinterprets restrictions on Park Service authority outlined in the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA.
It's supposed to be a restriction on government authority, not a roadmap how to evade it.
The same argument is at the heart of an appeal filed by Central resident Jim Wild in a criminal case. Earlier this month, a federal judge upheld Wild's conviction of misdemeanor offenses for resisting National Park Service rangers who pulled him over for a boat inspection on the Yukon River inside the Yukon Charley Preserve in 2010. Wild's attorney, Bill Satterberg, filed an appeal of the ruling Monday and has also requested that the Wild and Sturgeon cases be joined together for consideration by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
There was really no distinction between the decision in Sturgeon and the decision in Wild. The decisions were essentially on the same basic issues. The application of ANILCA, the application of the Katie John decisions, the Babbitt, if you will, decision.
Decisions in the Wild and Sturgeon cases have repeatedly supported the Park Service, finding room in legal language for the agency to carry out its mandated mission to protect park resources, including on state waters where they pass through parks and preserves created by the 1980 ANILCA legislation. The state has been involved in both the Sturgeon and Wild cases. Senior Assistant Attorney General in the Natural Resources Section, Ann Nelson, says the state has filed its own appeal in the latest Sturgeon case and is considering amicus status in the second Wild appeal. Last night, the Anchorage Assembly finally decided the issue of a state-funded recreation center with tennis courts. Assembly members approved $4.4 million for the project. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The Alaska Tennis Association had originally requested $7.2 million to build the recreation center, which would include a public tennis facility in West Anchorage near the existing ice arena. The Tennis Association did its own lobbying for the money and says $4.4 million won't be enough. Alan Clendaniel, president of the Tennis Association, says supporters have mixed feelings.
The Tennis Association is disappointed but also relieved that it's over. We were hoping that the Assembly would approve the $7.2 million or at least the $6.2 million. However, we're happy that the Assembly supported funding for this project. It shows they support it. And the question now is, we need to do further work to get it fully funded.
The Assembly has been debating whether it could or should use a state capital line item to fund the controversial project since early October. Assembly members didn't request money for it, and some legislators say they didn't know they'd approved it. The money for the rec center was buried in a package meant for infrastructure maintenance. During the meeting, Assemblymember Amy Demboski tried to put the issue before voters as a bond measure, but that was voted down. Mayor Sullivan came to the meeting with some legal opinions that he said contradicted a legislative affairs opinion that a new facility was not within the legislative intent of the capital budget item for maintaining existing facilities. Clendaniel says supporters hope a 2014 legislative request will provide the additional funds needed to complete the project. Mayor Dan Sullivan has 7 days to veto the item. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a full schedule of Japan Airlines flights boost tourism in Fairbanks.
We give everything from a 30-minute dockside ride to 6-night, 7-day adventure tours.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and north slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Alaska State Troopers will increase work to reduce property crimes in the Matanuska Valley soon. Trooper Captain Hans Brinke says the new crime suppression unit will be the area from Palmer to Valdez. The new unit starts on January 1st and will include one sergeant and three troopers. Brinke says troopers began discussing creating the unit after handling a large amount of property crimes. He says property crimes are on the rise in many areas of the state. Brinke says the Matsu's growing population has seen an increase in what are called smash and dash thefts, breaking into cars parked at trailheads, as well as home break-ins and car thefts. Brinke says those are not victimless crimes.
It's a property crime that the core transaction is stealing someone's property. Whether it's a violent crime, I'm not going to say that it's not. I don't want to say that property crimes are victimless crimes because they definitely have a victim. There's a lot of aspects to it. You know, you're being victimized at your home, knowing that someone's actually broken into your house.
The new unit is made possible by the increase in trooper positions requested by Governor Parnell and approved by the legislature in the 2014 budget. 17 new trooper positions were approved statewide, 5 of them assigned to the Matsu area. Studies show bullying is linked to a host of problems. Vandalism, poor performance, and absenteeism at school and work increase school dropout and job turnover, anxiety, depression, and suicide. Now an Anchorage professor sees a link between bullying and substance abuse. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Dr. Gabriel Garcia is a University of Alaska Anchorage Associate Professor of Public Health. He combed through CDC's 2011 Youth Risk Behavioral Survey for data about bullying and substance abuse in Anchorage high schools. He says the results show 26% of Anchorage high school students said they're being bullied in school or electronically, a rate that, he says, rises to almost a third among high school freshmen.
Girls are more likely to be bullied. Minorities are more likely to be bullied. And freshman students are more likely to be bullied.
Garcia says alcohol use among high school victims compared to non-victims was 30% compared to 21%. Also, he says the victim and non-victim rates of substance abuse were 59% compared to 42%.
Those who are bullied or who reported being bullied at school or bullied electronically, cyberbullying, are more likely to report using substances, and that includes any type of illegal substances like marijuana, other drugs like crack cocaine, and even prescription medication.
At the Bureau of Indian Affairs Providers Conference in Anchorage in early December, speakers laid out a process for communities to prevent bullying and offered some tips on how to handle bullies. One of the speakers, Kate Burkhardt, is director of the Alaska State Suicide Prevention Council and director of the Mental Health Board. She says having an ally when confronting a bully helps people stay emotionally and physically safe. And she says a community-wide effort can be more successful than confronting the parents of the bully.
Sometimes that can cause a lot of denial. A lot of, my child would never do that. My child's a good kid. If the bullying is taking place in a school environment, I mean, I've heard a lot from students. I reported it to my teacher. My teacher has not done anything. They say there's nothing that they can do.
Burkhardt says schools need to provide training and support to teachers and to adopt anti-bullying policies that lay out clear consequences for physical and emotional harassment. She says if enough people speak up, the school board will act.
You can say this bullying is occurring, whether it's occurring in the school or outside of the school, it's involving students within the school. And by saying, opening up that conversation, bringing people with you in the community that are seeing things the way that you do so that the schools can make a change. If enough community members come to the school and say, this has got to stop, they're going to have no choice but to listen to you.
Juno Coalition for Suicide Prevention Coordinator Lindsay Cato said the goal is to create a safe, connected community and a school that welcomes parents and children. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
CNN will examine Alaska's struggle with sexual assault and domestic violence in its Change the List project, propelling the issue to the national stage. The news agency sent a reporter to the state to start exploring the problem. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Columnist John Sutter heads the project Change the List on CNN.com.
This summer, we had our audience vote on the issues that they feel like are the biggest social justice issues of our time. It was sort of putting readers in the assignment editor's seat and them getting to choose what they think are really the most important topics.
20 ideas were put forward and more than 32,000 votes were cast. Sutter will write on the top five. The first issue Sutter tackled was income inequality. He focused on East Carroll Parish, Louisiana, the county with the highest level of income inequality in the U.S.
Another one of the topics was rape in the United States that was selected by our readers. And Alaska has the highest rate of rape, according to the FBI crime statistics. So that's what brought me up here to the state.
FBI statistics indicate the rate of forcible rape in Alaska for 2012 was about 80 for every 100,000 people, compared to the national rate of 27. Sutter says he wants to explore the complex factors that contribute to the state's high rate and find out what people are doing to fix it. His first stop was Juneau, which recently hosted the second annual Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Prevention Summit. Sutter says he's gotten some interesting answers to why the rate of rape and sexual violence is so high in Alaska.
One is the incredible isolation. I've heard from people that live in remote villages that are only accessible by plane much of the year that people are hesitant to come forward to report rape or sexual abuse, in part because it's difficult for law enforcement to respond, and the response times are often very, very long.
Sutter also heard that talking about rape and sexual violence is taboo in many parts of the state. But he says the prevention summit, where people were dedicated to talking about and stopping it, was encouraging.
This conference is very focused on prevention and positive work that is being done and can be done. And it seems very intentional to me. And I kind of like that focus, to be honest. Instead of sort of dwelling on the violence and the victimization and sort of these things that you actually often see featured in, you know, in the news, here everyone's talking about what can be done to prevent those things from happening at all.
The ultimate goal of Change the List is to help bring about change by highlighting the issues for CNN.com readers.
I don't claim to think that us doing a few stories on sexual violence and rape in Alaska can change things in and of itself, but I think we can be part of a conversation that's clearly already happening here at the summit and is already happening in Alaska and around the country, and sort of amplify some of the voices in that conversation and in that way try to be part of the solution.
Sutter interviewed Alaska Governor Sean Parnell, whose Choose Respect campaign has seen increasing community participation over the last 4 years. Parnell says he welcomes the attention that CNN will bring to what he calls Alaska's epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault.
This is America's problem, too. This is a worldwide problem. It's not just Alaska's issue. It's been covered up here for too long. We have been afraid to address it as friends of each other, as family members for each other, and to stand up for each other. But it's not unique to Alaska.
Lori Morton is executive director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which sponsored the Prevention Summit. She invited Sutter to attend.
While we do have a horrendous problem with domestic violence and sexual assault, we're not just staying stuck in the problem. People are actively working to move us away from that and call us into peace. It's not just sadness. There is hope involved.
After Juneau, Sutter traveled to Bethel. Sutter's reporting in Alaska will result in a series of columns, videos, and suggestions for how to keep moving forward, which will all be featured on CNN.com. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by Rural Energy Enterprises, supplying Alaska dealers with fuel-efficient Toyo stoves and Oil Miser heaters for more than 26 years. Local dealers can be found at rural-energy.com.
The new Southeast Radiation Oncology Center in Juneau celebrated its grand opening last week. Cancer patients from Juneau and Southeast Alaska previously had to travel to Anchorage, Seattle, or another large city to get radiation treatment. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
Radiation therapy uses high-energy radiation from X-rays, gamma rays, or protons to shrink tumors and kill cancer cells. According to the National Cancer Institute, about half of all cancer patients receive some type of radiation therapy treatment. It can be the only form of treatment or used with other treatments like chemotherapy and surgery. Dr. Eugene Huang is medical director of the Southeast Radiation Oncology Center. The clinic uses a machine called a linear accelerator to deliver radiation.
Basically, all the patient has to do is just lay down and try to hold still and try to relax, just like getting an X-ray or a CT scan. And it's typically delivered in several different beam angles that is custom designed for every single patient in order to maximize our targeting of the tumor and yet to avoid any excess radiation to the other normal tissue structures.
Tumor cells grow uncontrollably. Radiation kills them by damaging their DNA.
The cell undergoes what we call a mitotic cell death, which means as it's trying to divide, go through mitosis, it will figure out that it cannot because the DNA is damaged, and then it will die.
Radiation also kills normal tissue cells. Huang says the team at Southeast Radiation Oncology Center will use the latest software and medical imaging equipment to deliver it as precisely as possible for each patient.
We know from basically many, many decades of doing radiation, of many different ways of delivering radiation, that your normal tissues can tolerate a certain amount of radiation, whereas tumor cells are much more sensitive. So if you deliver the right amount, you can deliver just enough radiation to kill the tumor cell, but hopefully spare the normal tissue.
The staff at the center includes Dr. Huang, a radiation oncologist who practiced at the Cleveland Clinic before moving to Juneau. He will work with a medical physicist and a dosimetrist to come up with the right dose and treatment plan for each patient. The treatment itself usually lasts about an hour.
And different patients will have a different amount of treatment. Sometimes it's as short as a week or two. Often it's as long as 8 to 9 weeks. It depends on what kind of cancer, what stage, and a lot of other factors.
Southeast Radiation Oncology Center is a partnership between two companies, Anchorage Associates of Radiation Medicine and RBS Evolution. Huang says the companies are owned by practicing radiation oncologists. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Japan Airlines has announced a full schedule of flights to Fairbanks this winter. In its 10th year offering winter service to Fairbanks, the carrier is planning 18 round trips beginning this Sunday and running through April 3rd. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Northern Lights, Dog Mushing, and Chena Hot Springs have long drawn visitors from Japan to Fairbanks, providing a major tourism boost at a time when visitor numbers can be pretty weak. Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau President and CEO Deb Hickok says Japan Airlines' recently announced schedule of 18 Fairbanks winter flights provides for five-day stays that inject tourism dollars into the local economy.
So we have a few around the holiday time, the Christmas holiday. That's traditionally a big holiday in Japan also. And then we have a little bit of a gap. And then from January through the beginning of April, we have steady flights back to back. And that provides the baseline of business for a number of small businesses and large businesses in our town.
The FCVB first attracted the carrier to the city in 2004 based on growing Japanese interest in visiting Chena Hot Springs Resort. Hickok remembers naysayers who didn't think Fairbanks could support regular flights from Japan.
That it happened was really a coup. So, you know, in general, it's had some ups and downs, but it's been a really good run.
The downs included trouble with the Dreamliner aircraft and Japan Airlines bankruptcy reorganization, both of which reduced the number of flights to Fairbanks. Hickok says demand has never faltered, and Chena Hot Springs remains a big attraction for Japanese visitors.
But what we're seeing now is many, many small tour operators that are selling specialty tours. So we see some lodges and small B&Bs, and then we see a lot of dog mushers.
We give everything from a 30-minute dog sled ride to 6-night, 7-day adventure tours.
That's Leslie Goodwin-Williams, who operates Paws for Adventure. That's Paws, P-A-W-S. She says Japanese visitors account for about 40% of her business, and she tries to accommodate them as best as possible, but admits she still doesn't know enough Japanese.
Skoshi, very little. But I do get enough to get by. They probably know as much English as I know Japanese.
Goodwin Williams says the Japanese have a special appreciation for Alaska's wilderness. Opportunities to experience that may be expanding. Hickok says there's interest from Japanese operators in winter tours in Denali National Park. The Park Service will plow a longer stretch of the road into Denali beginning in February to accommodate new winter bus tours. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton, Ellen Lockyer, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Lisa Fu and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Alex Hotel and Suites, featuring amenities that include a 24-hour airport shuttle, hot continental breakfast, and a walk-in freezer. Information on Alaska resident rates at 1-800-221-7550. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.